From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Arun Roth. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where for years and years, many people dealing with mental illness and disabilities were kept apart from society, locked away in state institutions. Those institutions have largely been shut down for decades now. But families and advocates say Massachusetts has never truly reckoned with the abuses many patients endured. WBUR reporter Steve Brown has been looking into this story. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Arun.
There's a proposal on Beacon Hill to basically take on a reckoning of exactly what these former patients went through, how they were treated. What exactly would this do?
Yeah, well, there is a bill that would create a special commission tasked with telling the whole unvarnished history of what went on in the 27 state schools and state hospitals. Of course, our understanding of mental illness has evolved over the years, but up until the 1970s, many folks with developmental disabilities and other disabilities were sent away to these institutions, and some of them lived there their entire lives. Many of those people were abused. Waltham resident and Harvard lecturer Alex Green is a driving force behind this commission. He says the story needs to be told.
There is no formal statement of what the state schools and what the state hospitals were, why they came to be what they were, how they closed, whether those decisions were easy or hard for people, and what it all means in the context of American history.
Green wants this commission to include former residents of these institutions and people who have disabilities. He wants the entire story told, not just by the state who ran these facilities, but also by the people who live there.
Now, as we mentioned, many of these facilities have been closed for years and years. Why is this needed right now?
Several people who were children back in the 1950s and 60s were sent to places like the Fernald School in Waltham. They're senior citizens now, so the clock is ticking to hear from these folks.
Wow. And Steve, you did speak with one of these people, right?
I did. Patricia Brown is now 70 years old, but was brought to Fernald 62 years ago when she was only 8. She lived there until she was about 19. She described for me some horrible conditions that she witnessed.
A lot of children died. I seen them die right in front of me, and I couldn't understand why. It was a lot of abuse. It's sad. It's very, very sad.
Brown went on to raise a family and is currently pursuing her GED.
Wow, it's just kind of amazing. We think of it as a different time, but there are people still living with this. Now, one of the challenges for anybody looking to tell the history of these places is getting hold of the records. Could you explain why that is?
Sure. There's a couple of reasons. Many of these places closed in the 1990s and even afterwards, and the records were scattered all across the state. Now, many of the records are at the State Archives out in Dorchester, but they could be in a variety of other places. Alex Green says the commission could address the status of the records and develop a set of guidelines as to how they can be accessed. Now, many of them are patient records, so there are privacy restrictions attached. Family members need to go get a court order in order to gain access. I talked with Laura Zygmunt of Cambridge, who wants to learn more about her older sister who died at Fernald at the age of 7 back in 1965. The state won't even confirm if the records exist.
I could end up going through a lot of hoops and then they could say there are no records. You know, there was a flood. I mean, who knows? It's always the case.
So there's hope that the commission can cut through some of the red tape and get these records more available.
You spoke with a former employee from the institution. What are their concerns about this commission?
Yeah, they want to make sure that the advances in care that were made from the 1970s on are not overlooked. Everyone pretty much agrees these institutions were horrible places for people. And in the early 70s, a federal judge actually stepped in and ordered the state to improve care. Now, the state entered into a consent decree in 1975, promising to make improvements. The workers want to make sure that those improvements are noted.
So what's the status of the bill?
It had a hearing back in June. No one spoke in opposition of it. But like everything else here at the State House, things take time. It could emerge from the committee sometime in the next calendar year, or supporters may have to try again in a future session.
Steve, this is great reporting. Thanks so much for this.
My pleasure, Arun.
That's WBUR's Steve Brown. Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. Suffolk County Sheriff Steve Tompkins is facing pushback over his proposal to move some people living on the streets of Boston's Mass and Cass corridor into a former detention center. Tompkins says up to 100 people could be involuntarily committed to receive addiction treatment, similar to a program launched in Hampden County in 2018.
We're beyond the time where we can say, it doesn't necessarily feel right, so let's not do it. Well, this whole situation doesn't feel right, and so I'm a fan or proponent of saying that we need to try every option.
Tompkins says his department would create an environment where people don't feel like they're in a prison, but not everyone is convinced. Bonnie Tenurello, an attorney with Prisoners Legal Services of Massachusetts, says it will deter people from seeking help.
The stigma and shame that is conveyed by putting someone in correctional custody, those are completely contrary to treatment.
The state is already facing a lawsuit over using correctional facilities to involuntarily house men for addiction treatment. Meanwhile, some of the first Afghan evacuees are now arriving in Massachusetts after last month's U.S. withdrawal from the country. Over the weekend, a family of three arrived first, followed by a family of nine. Tim Garvin, president and CEO of the United Way of Central Massachusetts, says the city of Worcester will greet them with open arms.
The first refugees from the Armenian genocide came to our country and to our city, and Worcester welcomed them. So we have a 106-year history of doing this.
Garvin says the Fish Family Foundation has made a $100,000 challenge match and that more than half a dozen local businesses have stepped forward, ready to provide jobs. Other resettlement organizations report having plans in place as well. The International Institute of New England expects to welcome its first Afghan evacuees next month. In other news, starting today, East Boston residents will have a new way to get to the Seaport District. As part of a one-year pilot program, a ferry will provide morning and afternoon rush hour service between Lewis Mall in East Boston and Fan Pier in the Seaport. Shannon McDermott, Director of Transportation for the Massachusetts Convention Center Authority, says the ferry service could be more convenient than driving between the two locations.
You can look out from the seaport, you can see East Boston, but if you were to try to drive there, it takes a long time. It's not really a close-by location, but across the water, when you're on the boat, it's a 7-minute from dock to dock.
The ferry will run every 20 minutes and it will cost $5. It's believed to be the first ever ferry service between East Boston and the seaport. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo in news, I'm Arun Roth. Be well. Since you clearly enjoy podcasts, let me tell you about one more you might enjoy. From the producers of GBH's Antiques Roadshow, Detours is a podcast about what happens to all those antiques after the cameras leave town. Join Adam Monahan, longtime producer of Roadshow, for stories of sales, fakes, and even federal crimes. Subscribe to Detours wherever you get your podcasts.